podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Well, that was the thing, wasn't it, when Fox were putting up all those pictures of the gallery for the NRL coverage in Las Vegas. I thought, yeah, this is how it works. Apparently 10 people watching already. Hello to those 10 people. It's more than watching me at 2 weeks on Saturday afternoon.
What an innovative... what did you call it? Is this something that concept. You think is going to be a regular...
If I go somewhere... And
do you think you're setting a trend?
No, I'm sure I must have stolen it off. I'll tell you where partially I've stolen the... Welcome to the podcast, by the way. Where I've partially stolen the idea from. Mallorca have made it to the final of the Copa del Rey for the first time in 20 years, which is obviously important for other work. And because they, on their YouTube channel, they can't show games live because they haven't got the rights. So they show a commentary box with their commentators in, and then they've got a camera which is fixed on the dugout. So you see the man just going, ah, and stuff. And occasionally the football comes into view, and you think they're going to get sued from La Liga. So I thought, well, I'll kind of steal that. He must have been... People like reaction videos, don't they? Mm-hmm. But they like reaction videos to people saying eating American sweets or watching Japanese TV or something. Thank goodness I picked the word TV there. Rather than Wakefield versus Barrow in the 1895 Cup. But, you know, thanks to all the people who joined us on the chat on Saturday.
Well, you say it was purely you.
Well, it does. It's a collective effort, isn't it?
We got the shirt?
Swinton. It's one of last year's... I paid, including postage, £12 for it. I thought, 48, there's a chance. If the people who were with me on Saturday will remember this, there's a chance I can fit in, because it is a match-worn shirt. Nah. Not happening.
You sell that to Mr. Cam.
But it's nice. I quite like the design. I don't know how you describe it, but... I've got a great collection of random old shirts now.
Tie-dyed, I would call it.
Yeah. It's okay, isn't it? James, how are you?
Excellent, thank you.
You're not the one with the beard from last week's programme who was called names by a Wigan fan. I assume he was a Wigan fan. I didn't think I said anything about Wigan. I upset the Cast fans. Again, we've got to point out, it's Huddersfield this programme's against. Just remember. And Salford. And Salford. Phil, how are you?
Almost rugbyed out.
Rugbyed out.
You can never be rugbyed out.
No, sorry, I said almost. Yeah. Almost. What was it? One game Friday whilst watching two others... two on Saturday, two overnight on the early hours of Sunday morning, one on Sunday afternoon, and then a lot of obituary writing to the great Lewis Jones. So, it's been one hell of a weekend.
Tell us about the King of Rugger. He's here. There's a book you've written about Lewis Jones. Died today, aged 92?
92.
The Golden Boy, which is a great nickname. Again, we don't have great nicknames anymore. And a key part of Leeds' history, and the young people won't realise this, Leeds didn't win the championship until 1961.
Yep, 70 years it took them.
It's like Warrington-esque in modern parlance.
Well, if there's any hope for Warrington fans, it's that you've got another 15 years. Where to start? I mean, the thing about Lewis Jones' signing in 1952 was it created... the same kind of interest that John Gallagher's did when he turned professional in 1991, more probably than Jonathan Davis's did, but you're talking about that level of interest. Lewis Jones was from a place called Gorsynon in South Wales, a bit near to Swansea, and he had a meteoric rise in rugby union. He was, I think, 20 when he played for Wales at Twickenham against England. Within months he was a British Lion, he'd gone on tour, and he came back and signed for Leeds for a fee of £6,000, which in those days would have bought you three houses in Leeds, which is why he was nicknamed the Golden Boy. There's a story of the rush between Leeds and Warrington to get to the village to sign him first, and they both had cars full of suitcases full of money, but it was Leeds that got there. And yes, he was, I think enigmatic and mercurial would describe him. He had attacking prowess that very few players had. He had a hitch kick, he had a hanging pass, he had an imperceptible swerve and acceleration. But he was the most wonderful goal kicker as well. And until somebody called Kay Sinfield came along, he held all the records for point scoring and goal kicking. Still holds the record in the history of rugby league for the most number of points scored in a season. which was 56-57. He scored just short of 500 points in a season. The irony being that year Leeds got to Wembley and beat Barrow 9-7, and he missed all three kicks again. But he became one of only two Leeds players to hold a Challenge Cup winners' medal and a Championship medal when they won at Oddsall in 61, which again just put him in Leeds folklore, that when you're the captain that brings home what was known as the Holy Grail at the time, then however brilliant you are immortalised. So to people of a generation, he is the best player who ever played for Leeds. There are some memorable moments in certain games that are recalled. The semi-final in 61 when Leeds got to the Championship final, was they beat St Helens. And of course the aptness of that is a week on Friday Leeds play St Helens when he's going to be remembered. But that was a game where he gave Alex Murphy the run around, and Leeds scored two tries out wide, a lot of which had been down to what he'd done in the middle of the field. Played 15 times for Great Britain, went on tour, so became a double lion, and then went to Australia after 12 years at Leeds. Played player coached at a place called Wentworthville, scored another 1,000 points out there for them, won 5 titles with them on the bounce. They were just under what was New South Wales Rugby League, and at the time he was there were talking about applying to be part of that, but I think it was Penrith who got in instead of them.
No, nothing happened to Penrith
at the time of rugby. I think maybe even Cronulla at the time of that expansion. Wentworthville, one of the teams, came back to Leeds, became a maths teacher at a girls' school, was always at Headingley for home matches, became a taverner, had a suite named after him. The most modest and unassuming man you could ever meet, who had such a reputation, would never believe that he was any good. So when I interviewed him for the update of his book, the book was written, it was the second Rugby League autobiography that was written. It was written in 1959, so he'd won the cup by then, but he hadn't won the championship, so that when we came to revise it, we had the core of the book was what he'd originally written, but we needed to top and tail it with what had happened since. So I sat with him for quite a while. I have known him for quite a while, and we sat there at his favourite place, Horsforth Golf Club, where even to his last few days he used to wander down and have a pint of Guinness for breakfast every day. He was a low handicap golfer throughout his life, but he lived near the club, and he loved the people there, and they couldn't wait for him to turn up and pull the first Guinness of the day for him. And I kept saying to him, alright, and then 61 you won the championship, what do you remember about that? Oh, that was nothing to do with me. Like, no, it was, you were the captain, you scored the final try, you lifted the cup. Well, yes, I think we got £32. Well, yeah, but what did it mean to you? He just wanted to play down everything all the time, which to me is the sign of absolute greatness. Much, much loved, wonderful character. He came to the shop, and we had a book signing about the greats of Leeds, and obviously he was in it. And he came to the shop, and there were a lot of people that were queuing, and he did the usual walks. What are all these people here for? They're here to see you. What do they want to do that for? Well, because like you're famous and brilliant. But no, he was lovely, and he did have a very good innings, but he will be very sadly missed.
I always say at this point, whenever we do these, it's sad that we do them, but it's great because we get to hear stories about people who played in a dim and distant past that we don't hear about too often, which is a shame, and we need to do more of them while they're still around. And we know Leeds will do something.
They will. I mean, again,
appropriate is the word.
Yeah, they're wearing black armbands this Friday because they're away at Lee, but it's a Sky game against St Helens, so I suspect there'll be, you know, big tributes, and deservedly so. He was I'm told he was a truly wonderful player, and he had the privilege of seeing a few clips of him. Those that saw him can't speak high enough of him, but I just knew him as a guy who looked the same as he did when he played. he prematurely went bald while he was playing.
Why doesn't that happen these days? Obviously, him, Bobby Charlton are the other obvious example in sport. You don't see that these days.
The option to travel to Turkey obviously wasn't there.
And without wanting the programme to be dominated by it, the other thing that always used to make me laugh was he was renowned as a smoker, which you can't imagine these days.
So a pint of Guinness every morning, smoking.
Well, smoking at half time of game. So like the stories used to be that if you remember the old Headingley used to come down a concrete ramp at the far side of the north stand because that's where the dressing rooms were. And there are tales of him running out after the half-time break, still with a cigarette and striking it out on the wall as he was running down the concrete. You don't get those kind of stories anymore.
That is true. Thanks, Phil. Carsten says he's got 150 shirts, though he's always space for more. So it's just a tonal shift. How can you move on from these things? Everything's calmed down, hasn't it? After the first 2 weeks, and everyone going bonkers, it's all a bit. Well, apart from St Helens and Lee, should we start there? Is that where we start? I don't know. It's John Asiata. Why did he do that?
It was interesting. The conversation before the game between the commentators was about what Saints might do in response to what
my
John
understanding
Asiata
is
got charged with last year.
Thought of doing
yeah,
this
and
didn't get the chance.
You know, they didn't get the chance, did he? Because within 42 seconds, I think he was found himself in the sin bin. But that's been charged at Grade A this week, but no matches, which is interesting. I would have thought he'd have got more than that based on what I observed. But then, you know, Adrian Lamb didn't think it was anything. So, you know, who's to say?
Does it say something about culture? I mean, clearly, the player may well have decided that that's what he was going to do. It may have been mentioned beforehand. If you really want to upset the opposition, first chance you get, test your arm. But didn't we bring in reckless endangerment for exactly that type of tackle? And yes, there was no injury, but there clearly could have been. It was marginal as to whether it was the knee area or slightly above or below. But clearly, if the referee thinks that that is endangering Sione Matautia and he sin bins Asiata, shouldn't he be backed up by the
you would
MRP
expect so
process?
I mean, MRP would say they have because they've charged him, but it's their lowest charge that they can give in effect without it being a caution. I've not watched the Asiata clips from last season to compare them like for like, but just on the face of it, when I watched it on the night, I fully understood why he was sin binned, and I expected him to be given a higher graded charge.
I think the difference with the other ones, from what I remember, is there were already people holding the ball carrier when he came in.
Yeah.
Whereas that was a deliberate attempt to unsettle the opposition by giving them a dose of medicine that they'd found so unpalatable, understandably, with two players having their season.
His approach was similar in that he came in very, very low and came in at the knee, or appeared to come in at the knee, is from what I saw. So I thought it was reckless. I thought it was dangerous, and I thought the outcome was right on the night. And then it's up to match review panel. And this is where you get this process between what happens on field is separate and independent of what happens with match review, which is equally as independent and separate from what happens at disciplinary. But the downside, in some ways, of having that separation is that you can get inconsistencies. And I think we've seen this week, there's some charges that are not... Well, the players that have been sin-binned this
week
that haven't been charged that I'm surprised by, but also more surprised that there's no mention of them in the minutes of the match review panel. Normally, you would expect to see minutes of players sin-binned, even for professional fouls, just noting it was a professional foul and that was that, but... It's sort of like a slimmed down version of the minutes this week.
Does that undermine the referees, though? Because they're being given new protocols, they're being given so many things to look at. They're sin binning players, and then presumably they're getting into work on a Monday afternoon and going, well, everybody don't think now that I don't know what I'm doing, because the players I've sin binned have not been...
Well, you know, inevitably, when you look at your own review as a referee, you think, did I get that right or wrong? And then you'll have a sit-down chat with your reviewer, and you'll have a conversation whether you think you got it right or wrong. And then the charges come out on a Monday, and that will be another sort of indication, well, hang on a minute, yeah, they charged that, and they charged it at a level that we probably anticipated or otherwise. And I think there'll be conversations going on this week where they're saying, hang on a minute, we've sin binned this person and there's been no charge whatsoever. So either we've got it wrong or match review panel have got it wrong, but either way, there doesn't seem to be a consistency between those two processes, and ideally there should be. So I think there'll be questions asked internally this week as to who's on the right page. To me, from the outside looking in, it looks like match review panel have backed off a little bit this week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't see a change from what the referees were dishing out in rounds, one, two and three that we've now had. So Is it round four? I've lost track. Round three. Yeah.
So round three. Still saying it's top of the table after three games. Very important.
So, you know, I think there'll be some interesting conversations internally, really, because, yeah, they were what, in that Leeds game in particular?
Four players in mid.
Yeah, one was a professional foul. I'm trying to remember each one. Well, we Tarek Sims was
high contact.
Yeah, and then we had Sangara. Sangara's been charged,
but not banned.
But Sims hasn't been charged.
Dazaria, who was high but not charged.
He was Simbind, I think, but not charged. And then Bentley's been charged, but it wasn't Simbind. So, yeah, make of that what you will. There's definitely going to be questions being asked internally.
Navarrete was a professional foul. Yeah.
I'd still go back to what I said last week, which is, what is the framework?
Well, the other thing that's interesting is we had another media briefing, albeit over Teams this week, with Phil Bentham to introduce him and Robert Hicks, mainly to talk about the new Brown incident and why that had changed the framework. And it's all open and transparent, and we're going to explain more and communicate more. And then you see the charge from this week, and it's raised more questions than it's
answered. So did this show you the framework that they're working to?
It was on Teams, so this is
what I'm getting at. It is, where is the framework? What is the framework? Publish the framework. If it's open and it's transparent, publish it, and everybody can see it, and everybody can make their own minds up whether it's in line or otherwise with the framework. That's all I would say.
I can't think of the word that's not transparent, that is opaque.
Having said that, our on-field policy that we've had for many years has never been a published document.
No.
So I suspect that their view would be it sits within that on-field policy, which has never been published. The laws are published, but the interpretations that go along with that are detailed.
I mean, we're going to talk about Las Vegas, I assume.
Are we?
Otherwise, I've stayed up for nothing. But we're watching a different game.
Now, this is what Kevin said.
We say it every year, that it's a different game standard-wise, which is one measurement. But what we're watching at the moment is a completely different interpretation of the things that we're talking about over here. I mean, the first set in the Manly South game, to introduce the American public to what we're on, that was one of the most brutal sets of six I have ever seen. And within about 3 or 4 minutes, there were at least four players being treated with blood running out, and none of them went off for HIAs. None of them were penalised. Now, I'm not saying whether it's better or worse or right or wrong. What you're watching are almost two different sports.
But we knew that was going to be the case in many ways, didn't we? I mean, sorry, go on.
That's okay.
It wasn't half highlighted with
Was
Andrew Ross getting excited about it?
He has been known to get excited, yeah.
I don't think there was one card in Vegas, says Kevin Warren, and that was well more physical. That should be the tagline for rugby league. Rugby league, well more physical.
I mean, the number of cards that the issue in the NRL is always significantly lower than the Super League, even before the changes. So that was always going to be the case. But clearly, the way that the RFL has gone this year is quite different to the NRL.
I didn't hear any. I mean, clearly, all you hear is what's on the commentary team and the ex-players that are surrounding it. Didn't hear anybody even mention a referee. So it wasn't, oh, they've missed that, or, you know. What I did think was a lovely touch was the referees in Vegas were wearing the same kit as the NFL referees, so the black and white stripes, which looked really clever.
Have we got heritage numbers in the NRL referees?
They do, yeah. The full time referees have pinched that from the NRL. Yeah, so they've got. I don't know if you've noticed, but the Super League referees now have a heritage number on their shirts.
I spent
what was your number?
I don't know. I wasn't there long enough because I didn't find out what my number was.
Have one.
I don't know. I've not been given a heritage certificate or anything. I mean, Chris Kendall celebrated his 200th Super League medal on the game at Leeds at the weekend.
Why did they put him up for chat like I had a chat with Richie Miles? What do you remember about your 200 games, Chris?
So I said to him, you've only got another 134 to get past me, which is, I reckon, about 4.5 seasons. So he'll easily do that.
I was trying to work out, the three people who watched me on Saturday afternoon will know I spent the whole afternoon trying to work out who the referee was at Wakefield, because I didn't know who it was. It looked like Marcus Griffiths. I thought it was him. And then he looked tanned. I couldn't work out who it was. It was Liam Rush, for all those people who wondered. And that's according to the paper.
Both of those people.
Yeah. Me mainly, because I'm trying. From some angles, it looked like his hair, but then from others, it didn't look like it.
Liam, knowing Liam, I think he'll definitely be insulted by the suggestion that it looks like Marcus. And if he doesn't listen to the podcast, I'll make sure he does. Yeah. It's just to hear that.
Upsetting referees this way. It's easy. I can deal with upset referees more than Castleford fans. That's the problem. So Kevin, I think he enjoyed the Vegas games. I'm not sure there's much more to say about Saints versus Lee, other than Saints are, and they have been under successive coaches on this programme, because we've been accused of not giving them enough praise. They're almost too good. They're efficient. They're very good at winning games.
The great thing at this stage of the season is they've conceded 2 tries in 3 games. And irrespective of who they've played and how well are on the pitches that we've got at the moment, which, you know, I admire anyone who was on the ground, staff at any ground, but, you know, the amount of rain that they'd had in Saints before the game, it did look like a ploughed field by the end.
Yeah, it's not the best field at the best of times, that, by the way. And there were a number of lower leg injuries in that game, which, whether that was a contribution from the pitch. So
when you think defenders are going to be slipping, or it's not easy to you know, stay disciplined in that kind of weather and on that surface, for Saints to only to have conceded 2 tries...
I thought it was a decent game, actually. I quite enjoyed it. It was a physical
game. Lee really hung in there.
Yeah.
But they're suffering injuries this now, and it's going to be really interesting to see how they cope with that.
So this is the reverse of last year, where we mentioned at times Lee, not lucky with injuries, that's not the right phrase, but they didn't have injuries in the way that other teams did. Went on and won at Wembley, got to the playoffs.
Didn't have injuries to spine players either, which is so important.
To Pape out for, is it 6-7 months? I mean, that's pretty much your season, isn't it?
Asiata went off with an injury to his.
And Tom Briscoe looked like he's pulled a calf muscle as well.
We'll see what happens with Lee when they play Leeds this week. Super League's most unpredictable team, the Rhinos. We'll talk about those in a moment.
But entertaining.
But the entertaining Rhinos. Come on, you entertaining Rhinos. So obviously, everyone after the game at Saints and Leeds talking about what happened after the game on the bench. Fans are fans, and they are going to say things they may not necessarily mean, and sometimes they do mean the things they say, you know, because that's what they are. It's the definition of the word fanatic, isn't it? We've been through this before. Now, should you rise to what they say? No one comes to my workplace and stands outside my studio and screams abuse at me, do they? So I can't. I mean, you get abused. So I've got abused. I don't know if you still. Where are you in your office? I'm sure you don't get abused as well.
I don't.
Because that'd be a HR issue. Then there'd be problems. But yeah. When you were a referee, you know, you may have got some things shouted at you by fans. You can't go over to them and do anything back.
The best thing sometimes is just smile at them, because that usually just sends them even, you know. I usually get in the old south stand at Leeds, in the southeast corner was a disabled section. I don't know if it's still there, but I was used to be able to get disabled people standing out of their seats sometimes.
James Child is some kind of messiah here. What's going on?
Yeah, they were that incensed that they were up out of the wheelchair.
At the end of a wheelchair match, when everyone stands up, you go, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
Again, we haven't had.
The RFL are investigating, so.
So we're limited to what we can say. We haven't had formal confirmation of who actually is involved. So it's very easy. In fact, I think a lot of people on social media accused Chris Chester initially, and it clearly wasn't him. But the thing that I would say looked concerning was that the person involved was surrounded by a lot of Lee players, and they're in a position within the club that deals with players. What kind of example is that setting if you're throwing a plastic bottle at a fan? It's one that we will hear more about.
That's the kind of thing that will have a bigger impact on the image of the sport outside of our rugby league bubble than whether people are getting sent off for hitting people in the head.
Yeah, that goes viral.
It does. I had things thrown at me, like plastic, you know, plastic beer cups and stuff.
You sure it was beer?
Yeah, there was one at Salford. Yeah, I managed to avoid it.
Mark Snead was interviewed after the Hull KR game on Saturday night, and he had a pint of beer thrown over him by a Hull KR fan.
You definitely take it as a compliment, because, you know, what does a pint of beer cost at a game? Well, if someone's prepared to throw seven quid at you, you know.
£6,000 apparently now is worth about £150,000. So, you know, imagine a pint of beer in today's money. I mean, it's don't throw beer. Don't just get banned. You'll get banned, and then you won't be able to go watch your favourite team and I don't know. Imagine if you supported a team who hadn't been to Wembley in years, and then you got banned and you weren't able to go. I mean, you could probably sneak into Wembley. It's quite a bit.
Well, what were you thinking of doing? Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I'm not going to the semi, so I'm all right. I'll be okay. It just reminded me of that great Wakefield Warrington semi-final in the Challenge Cup at Lee, aptly enough, with the fan behind. I think it was Chris Kendall making a offensive gesture. Also, he was saying, "Do you fancy a Nescafe?" during the old Gareth Hunt shake the beans.
Yeah, there's been plenty of those.
That was a classic of the genre. So St Helens won, he says, moving on quickly.
And we're very impressive.
And we'll see what they do next week when they play against Salford on Friday night, when there's three games on the tally at once. That's good. Also on Friday, Warrington beat Castleford 30 points to 8. It's this interesting thing with Castleford now that the mood around the supporters and everything is completely different to last year. They haven't won a game yet, have they? They're still without a win, but everyone's like, we can see the players are trying, we can see they're not just here for the money or whatever, they're having a go. We haven't won a game yet, but we're happy with the way things are going, and obviously things are moving at glacial pace off the field with the stadium as well. So Cass, despite being 0-3, losing at Warrington, positivity. It's good. That's the review of Warrington versus Castleford. And Warrington have won again. So, you know, so Sam Burgess in. Yeah,
they're third. So all's good.
It'll be better than being top like they were last year, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, again, Sam Burgess was realistic enough in his press conference to point out that they are by no means the finished article at the moment, and some bigger tests will come down the line. But I think you've got positivity at both of those clubs. It's going to be interesting to see what happens when who do Warrington play this week.
We've done this every week.
Fixtures are all over the place.
They're Thursday. They're at Hulkington Rovers, who will need to bounce back after their defeat at Salford.
That is going to be an interesting test for Warrington. It's a relatively short turnaround against a team that perhaps didn't play as well as they had previously this year, but go back home with a fanatical support base. That we'll know a little bit more about Warrington this week.
And equally, Castleford at home to Huddersfield. So
Huddersfield. Wigan 30, Huddersfield 16. Again, I'm flicking between all three matches, trying to work out what's going on. I think this is the game I spent the least amount of time on, which is no disrespect to Wigan, because obviously they're much like St Helens, as we said, they're an efficient winning machine, and 30 points to 16 is comfortable. Another hat-trick for Liam Marshall, who, as you say, is in the form of his career, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Certainly, yeah, it appears that way.
If you were picking an England team at the moment, you'd...
Against who? Against the Bagpuss.
France and mid-season.
Against England women. Then you would, you'd think that Liam Marshall would have to be in contention for that team. Mm. But no, I mean, again, week after the World Club Challenge, all you need is a W, doesn't matter how you get it. I think Wigan did tire a little bit, which is not to decry from Huddersfield coming back into the game. Like you, I've only seen the tries, but it seemed like an efficient Wigan performance. Everybody has said it's not necessarily the week of the game, there's a bit of euphoria and a hangover, and the crowd will carry you home a little bit. The next couple of weeks we'll see how strong Wigan's squad depth is, because they're now starting to suffer a few injuries, and interestingly they go to London on Saturday, which I think they will still have the depth to win that, but London much improved this week, or were they? What do we think about Hull?
I want to be at Robin Park when they come through with all the trophies and the lights are flashing and everything, because that looks superb. It's all those little things that you do off the field that are going to count.
They're doing all of that really, really well.
That's it about Saints, I forgot this. When did we decide then that James Robey, greatest player of all time, as we know, right, he's the GOAT. When did we decide now that he's rubbish and Darrell Clarke? They're different type of hookers, they're different type of players.
How can you compare a legend of the club with someone who's played three games? The style may well be slightly different. The team may be playing to Darrell Clarke's style because they haven't got James Robey, but do not be a history revisionist.
I don't like this.
James Robey was one of the greatest players that we've seen in the summer era.
We can't spend the whole of last season, especially towards the end, saying, James, you've got to go see James Robey, he's the last, blah, 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 and this and that. And now we're going, actually he wasn't as good as we're saying he was.
He was. Don't let anybody tell you what he was.
He's good as well. But, you know, it's very strange, very strange. Salford 17, Hull Kingston Rovers 10. Ryan Hall said they were rubbish, and he was rubbish. So he's allowed to say that because he's a senior professional, so that's fair enough.
And he would know rubbish when he sees it.
Another game affected by the weather and the pitch, yeah. Really, it looked to me. So again, I saw bits of this game. I thought it was a spirited performance, certainly by Salford, wasn't it?
I think, again, we underestimate Salford because every week we look at who they're playing, we look at their fixtures, we look at who's not available, we look at who they're drafting in, perhaps in unfamiliar positions like Chris Atkin having to play fullback. And I think Mark Snaider was open and honest enough to say when he was interviewed, when he clearly was the man of the match, to say, you know, these conditions sort of suit a player like me when it's getting your team around the field and kicking penalties when you get them. Two great results in consecutive weeks, but too early to decide whether that one swallow is going to make a summer.
They, as you say, they're one of those teams who you, let's say, fly under the radar, but again, they do what they do. They pick up wins when you don't expect them to. I'm not saying I didn't think they could beat Hull Kingston Rovers, but the way that they played the first 2 weeks, you'd think, I think they'll go there and get a result. And as it turns out, they don't. So,
I mean, Hull KR do need to bounce back this week, being at home and on the telly. Well, everybody's on the telly. But like
on proper telly.
The Thursday game.
Telly, yeah.
The only game on telly that night. So we'll see if their credentials are founded on, the kind of team we think they're going to be this year. But Salford, you know, the one thing that struck me about all three games they played, including the first game where they only narrowly lost, is they've got a real togetherness. It doesn't matter who the players are, it doesn't matter what position they're playing in. One thing Paul Rowley has got is the ability to mould a team. And Nene McDonald has been a fantastic acquisition for them. Just don't let him go on holiday during the season.
Was that Barry McDermott's BBC debut? Was he ever done commentary for them before in the olden days? Or has he always been part of the Sky thing?
Yeah, I don't think he would have done.
No, just pitching up randomly. And there he was, him and Fraser Dainton on the red button. I flicked between the two just to see if it was the same, and it was. I thought, well, there's no point in me watching on both channels. I can just watch it on one this time. I don't have to choose my commentary team. But interesting times. I didn't realise it was on the iPlayer until very late in the week. I don't know why I didn't realise, but just suddenly I thought, oh, it's on. And it just appeared. At least it was on the red button, so people could watch it without faffing around on the internet. But good result for Salford. 5,000 in there. Again, not sure what they can do to get bigger crowds. It's not the AJ Bell anymore, that's the other thing. Salford Stadium, a bit dull. Council need to get that sorted, get some of the money back by selling the naming rights. 40-20 Stadium. 50p.
James Charles Stadium.
Oh, send them bag puss.
They want to get more people in, not less.
I mean, for our viewers who are sadly enough to play games like Football Manager, they will know that if you do really well, like you're the manager of Dundalk and you win 13 straight Irish Premier League titles, they name their new stadium after you. Which it's quite disconcerting if I ever went to Dundalk that there isn't a Richard Shawright Stadium there. But there you go. Dumbest sin bins of the week. Phil says Dion Cross. Mark says Adam Kieran.
Yeah, I saw the Adam Kieran one. That was a bit dumb. That was ball went dead and he threw it over the advertising order. So he made the restart. What was the Dion Cross? Was that along the same lines?
That was stopping. Yeah,
it was. I think he knocked the ball out of his hand, didn't he? Say he just sort of delayed a 20-minute restart. Yeah.
Stop doing daft things, rugby league players. I had a long message about the Leeds Salford game, which I'll come to in a minute. But at Leeds Salford, Leeds Catalans game. Leeds 18, Catalans 10. Have the wheels fallen off at Catalans? What's going on? It can't be Leeds being good. Surely not.
There was an element of that. What? It has to be said. Just mentioned, you know, Salford's unity. I think in the first 20 minutes of that game, Leeds lost the ball on their own either 20 or 30 metre line 5 times, but their ability to defend it was the cornerstone of that victory. The other thing is clearly they want to play this year, and they are incapable of scoring anything other than spectacular tries. But that makes them a great watch, and I know that they're probably not the neutral's favourite second team, but if you want rugby league entertainment, then I think, you know, Headingley might be the place to get it this year, because the pass by Cameron Smith has got to be the assist of the week.
It was, yeah, it was a beautiful pass there.
But the passage of play leading up to that, where again on the last tackle they're prepared to move the ball on their own quarterway line and fashion a way to...
In commentary they said that was against what Rowan Smith wanted. He didn't want them to offload. He didn't want them to pass the ball out wide, and yet they were passing the ball out wide.
I think that's exactly what he does want them to do. And Brody Croft is clearly, who played his best game since he signed for them, is clearly behind all of that.
Yeah.
But now there was an element of fortune that Louis Robertson's kick came off Tom Johnson, and Harry Newman brilliantly pouched it and kept the move going. Yeah. That kick could have gone anywhere.
Yeah.
But that sort of 60-70 metre move that allowed Smith then to come into dummy half and throw the ball over the top. If you're going to be watching stuff like that every other week, Leeds are going to be a team to watch. And it was a really entertaining game. Again, in pretty difficult conditions, but it was a massive contrast in styles, because Catalan are huge.
Mm.
And when you can bring Chris Sarte off the bench to make you huger, they offer a major threat to teams that won't front up.
Yeah.
So the fact that Leeds then did and went round them rather than try to go through them, it was a great game. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a shame I missed the first half, because I really enjoyed the second half, I must admit. Yeah.
18-10. So I had a message from a listener who will remain nameless, because I don't know if you want them to be named. Question for James on Monday, it says, which is easy because it does my work for me, but it's lots of words, so bear with me, listener. The first Ash Alley try, where he was being pulled back by the Catalan defender without the ball, but still managed to get the ball down, and a try was awarded. It would have been given as a penalty try had he not grounded it. The referee said that to the video ref. But ironically, Leeds would have had an easier conversion in front of the post had a penalty try been awarded. Just wondered what the decision-making process is, because in some respects Leeds suffered from the try being awarded because the conversion was missed. So then it ended up, I didn't send you the rest of the conversation, James, but then I thought, what about we go down the NFL route where teams can decline penalties and gets really complicated? Mm. But in this sense, in this kind of occurrence, what's the thought process?
Yeah, well, it would have been better served knocking on. because then he would have had a try given under the sticks, as the person rightly says, it would have been a penalty try. So, but yeah, the laws of the game, you can only obviously award a penalty try where a try has not been scored, and on this occasion, despite the pullback, he was still able to ground the ball, and so it was a standard try, if you like, and therefore the conversion's taken in line with where the try is given. So yeah, Ash Handley, if that happens again,
knock on. There you go, Ash. You might
get penalised for a deliberate knock-on.
the only other thing to arise from that, though, is we have to think of another name for an 8-point try.
Well, this is another thing we've been through before, isn't it? This is definitely
if it isn't an 8-point try,
you have to miss it, yeah.
You can't call it an 8-point try.
Which Reece Martin didn't kick the conversion from the touchline, did he? So it was an 8-point try, became a 6-point try. But yeah, it is an 8-point try in the laws of the game. I've always thought it's odd. But yeah, a snappy phrase for an 8-point try.
Potential 8-point try, that's all you can put.
A try plus. I don't know. Because we're going back to the early days of
Trimax
rugby scoring, where it had all kinds of weird names and things. And
Super try.
Can we just call it something like a rouge? Because no one knows what that means. It's in Canadian football. I don't even know what it means. Mark said, "What would James think?" Because it doesn't matter what me and Phil think about having an orange card. It's another card for you to get on the telly with to wave at the screen. That in my head, Martin, in my head, this works like this. Were more like an ejection in the NFL, where a player would be excluded from the rest of the game after a foul play, but the team stays at 13 aside.
Yeah, I may have heard on another podcast somebody suggest this idea.
Mark, you've not been talking to other podcasts.
But I don't get on what basis. What would be the basis to send somebody off effectively and then... but still allow that team to have 13 players? There's a reason why you've been sent off, and that's to penalise the team. I'm more in favour of a yellow card, which then potentially gets upgraded to a red card, and allowing the officials greater time to review the incident in order to upgrade it to ensure that it's a correct decision as opposed to a rushed decision. I'm more in favour of that than an orange card, if you like, where you still keep 13 players. It's a bit like... it's a warm up, lads. You know, we'll still play 13 aside, and we've had that in games in the past. But sometimes we come in on a Monday and said, "Oh well, the coach just said before the game that we could, if you wanted to sim bin somebody, we'll just leave 13." No, It's not under nines, this. This is a professional sport, so you can't do that.
Not in ice hockey, where if you get a 10-minute penalty for misconduct, you're in the box for 10 minutes and feel shame. But they can still bring on another player. You're still at full strength. That's kind of complicated. I was filling time because Simon wrote the message, deleted it, and then he's re-put it on. Is there not a case, welcome to Making Up Rules Corner. If you haven't heard it, by the way, the Hypothetic Rugby League podcast the other week did a whole episode of Making Up Rules for Rugby League, which was brilliant because it's just a waste of an hour, isn't it? Just make things up. Is there not a case for the foul being counted the same as foul play in the act of scoring and a penalty under the post being awarded? I guess is that in that case, are we going back to...
I don't understand the question, sorry.
Simon, rewrite that question because I think it made more sense when you wrote it the first time. James is now looking at the screen to check it.
As you can see, if you're watching, my eyesight's terrible.
That's why you're a referee.
See, Specsavers did that tweet last week, didn't they?
Brilliant.
But they're already still sponsoring the boards at the side of the pitch because I saw them at Hull yesterday at the whatever Hull Stadium is called these days. I thought Wakefield against Hunslet ARLFC the other week in the Challenge Cup were unlucky with the first try because it was given as a penalty try, but... Is my understanding right, if it hadn't been, because I don't think he would have scored it anyway, but the player who fouled the Wakefield player who ended up going off injured would have been able to be sin-binned. Well, you can't be sin-binned in a penalty try, can you, or something?
Correct, yeah. You won't have sort of double jeopardy on a penalty try situation. So I was half listening to you then. So
that's
yeah,
okay.
If it's a pullback...
Much like none.
If it's a pullback in a try-scoring situation... A try's not been scored, it would be a penalty and a sin bin. Or, if in the opinion of the referee or video referee, a try would have been scored, they'll award a penalty try.
Not an 8-point try where you fouled in the act or after you've scored.
Yeah, so we did see double jeopardy on the Leeds game where an 8-point try was awarded and Sims was still sin binned for that offence because it's foul play, which is different to professional foul. No, quite.
We're falling into the trap now, just asking James questions.
Yeah, it's turning into a society meeting. You know, when you come up with the most ridiculous points of play. Yeah,
you are the
what happens team. If, you know, it's a really windy day and a dog runs onto the pitch and, you know...
What if someone's wearing a wig? And the wig.
Although I did have, you know, a game in Catalan once, Challenge Cup game, Catalan against Salford, I think it was, and I had a penalty goal attempt, missed... But it was caught on the full in the in-goal area by a ball boy.
Oh!
That was like, oh, hang on a minute. What do we give here?
Where was the controversial goal kick this week? Where was that? That was somewhere. That happened in a game and Rod Studd tweeted
St. about Helens,
it.
I think.
Because
he
probably mentioned next stuff and looked
like he had gone over. But
St. Helens posts are too short and they need taller posts. I must admit, it can sometimes be difficult. But that's all about camera angles, isn't it? I'm guessing, but I flicked over at that point. The try's been scored. I thought, right, I'm flicking over to the next channel. Flick back and they said, oh, that could be a controversial moment if it ends up. I thought, oh, I've missed something there to do with the conversion. So that's a lesson. Don't turn over.
Simon, did we answer your question? That's the question I'm asking you, Simon. For all the people on the podcast, if you don't watch us live on a Monday, you're missing out on all this kind of interactivity you can get involved with. Currently still Turkey's number one rugby league podcast. We made it to the top 250 on the Apple charts this week, but I reckon we can claim higher because it's full of wrestling podcasts. And I will say it's not sport. It's definitely not sport. So I think we can claim higher than 249. If only we can get closer to the BBC and chase them up a tree. Yes, we answered this question. Yes, excellent. Thanks, Simon. Is there anything else to talk about Leeds and the Catalans?
It's just a great game. Yeah. The more games we get like that as the weather gets better, the happier we'll all be.
Yeah, let's pray for some dry weather.
So if you can do that in the wet, who knows what you can do in the dry?
Any French style food in Ronnie's Cafe or whatever? I've not been to Leeds for a league game and sampled the food since the event, so I'm kind of missing out there. But still, the Bovril works at Wakefield, so that's the good news there. The final game in Super League this week was Hull FC versus London Broncos. Oh, I felt so sorry for London. But in fairness, their defence on that final tackle
is why they lost.
Exactly.
But again. For the third team we've spoken about, London may not be winning, but there's something about them.
Are we building a league table on moral victories as well? See where people.
That's moral.
New IMG. Yeah.
I think the fact that they know they've got a squad that they haven't been able to augment in the way that matches them with other Super League teams, and they may do when the French season finishes, which they did last year. You've got to make the best of what you've got. They've had some serious long-term injuries to some of their players as well, but they never gave in and looked like they'd stolen the game. I think they scored 5 tries, of which 4 were from kicks and 1 was an interception. So again, they're not creating a huge amount, but whenever they're getting a chance...
I think Hull scored an interception try, didn't they? Yeah, that's about the only thing I saw in the game.
So I think, you know, London will be heartbroken on the journey home that they came so close to winning that game. And Hull will nearly be grateful for the fact that they got the 2 points, because...
They were in desperate need of those 2 points.
Yeah, and the sympathy I've got with Hull is that they just can't pick the same team every week. No, so there clearly is no continuity, irrespective of whether you think their recruitment's good or not, whether players are playing in the right position or not. I think they had 14 unavailable this week. They don't know from one training session to the next who is going to be playing. So clearly that is showing in their performances. To get the win was the most important thing. It definitely wasn't pretty. A little bit of it wasn't clever. They've got a great young winger who looked like he should have scored and dropped the ball, Lewis Martin, with the line open. Mm. I was pleased for him that they ended up winning the game, because that's a hard thing to come to terms with if the result had gone the other way. And if you're looking for a positive for Hull, they found a way to win.
That's what it's all about. The league table does not have a column for moral victories. So there you go. That try was massive for Hull FC, says Kevin. That is exactly right.
Well, it's only massive depending on what they do this week as well, because...
Well, they're weighing Catalan this week. I mean, that's a tough ask, isn't it?
I'm afraid
their injuries.
And looking at the disappointment Catalan had in the fact that they didn't control a game that they felt they could have done, they're going to be looking to hit back and big style.
Vegas. Now... Very disappointing with the NRL coverage on Fox, because it was all Elvis, you know, and Rugby League pioneered things in the 80s by taking games to the Isle of Man with a charity shield. Phil doesn't know where this is going yet. He's trying to work it out.
Never got a mention, did it, that Isle of Man?
Because at the first charity shield, the pre-match entertainment, Abide With Me, sung by Tony Christie, of course, of the famous song Las Vegas, never used on the coverage. Disappointing. Bloody Australians, Valandi out and all that. 40,746 people, many of which came from here, because they were all posting their pictures.
Apparently, 5,000 attributed to the UK.
Yeah, so a few people on my socials and timelines being there. I didn't realise they were going, and then.
So when people say we don't go to Wembley anymore because, you know, it's too expensive and blah blah blah, but we're off to Vegas. Yeah. I'm joking. So it all kicked off, and there was big build up all week. TalkSport had the commentary from Triple M, which I think is the first time they've ever done that. And there were 2 games of Rugby League. Did anything happen in those? Or was it just, you know...
It was sensational. From start to finish. And actually, if you've followed Rugby League for as long as I have, and you've seen...
That's a long time.
It's a long time. Seen so many false dawns and opportunities missed. When you watch something like this, it almost does bring a lump to the throat and a tear to the eye with what it could be. Clearly, I wanted to stay up all night because it's a moment of history, and it's all very well watching it on repeat or having your timeline when you wake up telling you what's happened. I think you need to try and be as much of a part of that as you can as it happens to make sense of it. So thank you to the huge vat of coffee.
I was going to say, I admire your, you know, commitment to the cause, because I've not seen any of it. So, it would be a quiet podcast if you relied on me to talk about it.
But it was astonishing, because it could have fallen flat on its face. And yet, and I get that, you know, that Fox are the primary broadcasters. They've got that link into America anyway. They want it to be a success. So their coverage was very much... This is the greatest thing that's ever happened. So you've got people like Matthew Johns and Gordon Tallis.
Matthew, NRL is going to buy Super League and turn it into winter, so Tom Trebojevic can play for Hull KR and Salford. Yeah.
But at some point, the product has to live up to the hype. Now, we know, because we're watching it with Rugby League eyes, that it probably will. Mm. But you sort of start watching it and thinking, right, if I didn't know this sport, what's happening that would make me want to go, wow, that's amazing. So... The physicality at the beginning of the first game took your breath away a little bit. And then there were some incidents within the two games where you think that'll go viral. People will see that and say, "I want, if that's coming back next year, I want to be there." So you had the Jason Saab interception for Manly, who had spoken in the week. He was one of the players that was put up to the American public about maybe wanting to try out in the NFL. He is 6'5" and apparently just over 10 seconds for the 100 metres. He's the quickest man in the NRL. And he broke away down the sideline, and you're already thinking the American crowd will love that, because they don't really, you know, they go mad for interceptions. And Lachlan Ilias comes across and taps his ankle and puts him into touch, and it's just a wow moment. Then in the Roosters game, you've got Joey Manu with a behind the back flick pass, and we're going, yeah, that's a bit of skill, that's really great, but we're a game that does that kind of thing. And you could almost audibly hear the gasp in the stadium of people going, how has he done that? You've got Reece Walsh, who was clearly the Patrick Mahomes. He's the pin-up boy. He's got the looks, but he's got skills to back it up. He scores a try, and the picture as he's diving in for the try, he's got his tongue out. And again, it's like, you know, that's what Americans love to see, that extrovert nature. And I spoke to a couple of people afterwards who'd been out there via social media. One of whom was American, and obviously it was their first time that they'd been. They'd followed the NRL, so they weren't going as a rookie, but they'd never seen it live. And they sat with a load of other Americans, and the one thing that came across that people could not understand wasn't the fact of the brutality without the pads, which they loved. It was the fact that all of the players could do all the things. They could not work out.
Yeah, they're not just
how
yeah.
That guy who's just done that run has made that tackle, and that guy who has just scored that touchdown has just leapt high and said he should be on the special teams, but like he's doing it anyway. And I think that's what captivated. There were apparently 20,000 Americans there. Quite a lot of them were linked to the rugby league communities because there was the Nines there, and you would have got, most naturally, people who do know the sport that would have gone, as opposed to those that, there clearly were some who were interviewed who just happened to live in Vegas and thought, oh, we'll go, it's the biggest event this weekend. But what they saw took their breath away. And that's the bit that I loved the most. It didn't matter who won or lost. It was the fact that everybody's talking about 5 years and what you can build on the back of what they did. And, you know, don't judge whether it made or lost money in year one. Don't judge the crowd.
We're not jumping on one thing and going, well, this is great and everything's going to happen, this is bad.
And there clearly were going to be things that worked better than other things. But the whole week, apparently, was ridiculous. They had a fan fest in the old part of Las Vegas. 5,000 people.
Yeah, I saw that on social media. It just looked insane. I've been there in that street. Yeah, it was mad.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, you've got NASCAR... I think drove all their cars down the strip in support of it. Now, all of that kind of stuff that went on, the fact that the USA played Canada in Amherst International in a high school, didn't matter that, you know, it was in a high school, that it was part of this week. There was a Masters Festival. There was a combine where two women have already been offered the chance to play in the NRLW. You know, all of that, when you add all that together, that is a massive foundation stone to build off. So, yes, it was fantastic, and I loved it, even though Brisbane lost.
Even though Brisbane lost. Our friend Nicholas, he renewed his vows in one of the Elvis things.
He did.
Nicholas, God.
It was his wife's idea, apparently, and instead of a ring being passed, it was a ball.
And she was walked down the aisle by the...
By the South Sydney mascot.
South Sydney mascot, the bunny, yeah. Insane.
That was a different wedding, but yes, that was all all part of it. Yeah.
Oh well,
all merges into one after. Yeah, my mate from Alabama says, Neil described rugby league as the NFL played at the speed of basketball. That's a good one.
It'll be interesting to see how it grows.
Yeah,
you know, because this is year one, isn't it? I mean, even daft things like, you know, the pitch being slid in and stuff. All the socials that was done on that. I mean, that was impressive, wasn't it?
A real pitch. A real grass pitch. Yeah. It wasn't AstroTurf.
Yeah.
And they all talked about, oh, it's smaller and the in-goals. It didn't matter.
The yellow, you know, even down to the
yellow post
to sort of match the gridiron post and stuff. Yeah, the details that they've put into that as an event, you know, to stage it, I think are pretty impressive. So it'd be interesting to see how it grows.
And there's only one missing element. We need to be there. Super League needs.
But I thought you meant us. Yeah, we'll do it.
Well, we do. Yeah,
I'll get the passport sorted in a year if the NRL want us to do the podcast.
We'll do a live.
You don't have to stay up all night then, do you?
I would get. I'm not a huge fan of America for lots of reasons.
One well,
of
that's which, you're bad now. You're
one of which is they don't have a sense of humour. But don't understand irony. Really, do you mean that? No, I don't actually. It's, but it's never mind. But I would go to Vegas next year to watch that if we could find a...
Someone to pay you to go out there?
No. If we could find a spot in the calendar where we weren't doing a million other things at the same time, I would go because I really felt like I'd missed something.
Yeah. What do they add to it then? What or do you just go again? Because Kevin said there's room for three games. But do you just have another two games next year.
Rodri Jones was out there, wasn't he? A representative of Blue Commercial.
Matt Dwyer of IMG.
Yeah, so there's obviously conversations going on there. I suspect the World Club Challenge will end out.
Which would have been fantastic. I mean, there's a timing issue with that because the Australian clubs want to play it before their season starts, and this was week one of the season.
Yeah.
But yeah,
there's a bye round in the competition, isn't
there? You could imagine. Yeah, you just give that team the bye in week one, don't you?
Yeah.
And until they get 18 teams when there won't be a bye round. Yeah. But you could put the World Club Challenge in. You could have that either on the Friday night or you could make it three games in that stadium. I think the other thing that struck me was that after the first game, very few people left because they're used to seeing a three or 4 hour game. So to get two games for that period.
Yeah, it was like the games in Toronto when people used to rock up during the game because, you know, they're not used to sort of, you know, a game being relatively short. And you know, you go to the baseball, it goes on all day, doesn't it?
So I think the World Club Challenge would be a great fit. But there is a thought that you could take a Super League game on the road. You know, if you took Hull KR, if you took Wigan and Saints, if you took a game where you've got teams that are renowned for travelling.
A loop fixture.
It would have to be somebody's home fixture. Well, we've got them anyway, haven't we?
That's
we
what might, I mean. We've got loop fixtures. We might as well give it loop meaning. Fixture.
It's been one of the
so
games
somebody doesn't lose a home game, do they? You know, it's
but
one
you
of the
look
loop
at the teams where historically their fans have travelled. You know, Leeds took 1,500 people to Melbourne the other year. Saints took.
Warrington are always usually travel well, don't they?
Wigan and Hull went and played an exhibition game in Australia. There were, I think, 5,000 fans from the two clubs. If we knew
plenty
in
of
advance
notice. Yeah.
when it was and what we were playing for, it's got to be something meaningful that we're playing for, not an exhibition game, then I think you've got another 25,000 seats to fill in that stadium. You'd immediately tick off another 5,000 with...
If the NFL can bring games over to Europe... And they have a much shorter season than ours for a team, a franchise to give up a home game. It's different for when the baseball comes because they have 182 games in a season or something ridiculous. No one's going to miss one. But if they can do it over here and in Germany and in Mexico, then I'm sure we could take the pain of losing a home game.
There is no pain of losing if you get financial recompense. And what we're looking at is a commercial reason for doing it. And it's out there. I mean, the next thing that will be interesting to see is what Las Vegas says about the event. You know, how much money was generated, you know, what was spent in the casinos, and we like all these people. The other great thing is that the NFL season has just finished, so you've got like that 2 week gap that there's nothing filling it for American punters, and you're giving them something that's not dissimilar to what they're used to watching. You just think, I can see a lot more Americans getting buying into this.
So while I'm still not lukewarm but very cold on the idea of Super League America, because I think that's a long, long, long way down the line if you're going to do something like that. And that's what they want to call it, Super League America, which is a strange thing, when everything else there is three initials and NRL and whatever. But if you can build gradually and don't do stupid things, then we might have. I'm not going to say we're going to crack America, but our version of rugby is more like their version of rugby than the other version of rugby.
I just
to confuse everything.
We've got a different model here, whereas in the past it's all been there has to be a direct correlation to a domestic competition. If it gives impetus to a domestic competition, that's fine. But what we're doing is what the Americans love. We're giving them an event. We're taking the elite players to their back door and saying...
And ultimately to benefit the domestic sport back in its home country.
What the NRL want are a lot of Americans to buy subscriptions to their app to say, oh, I enjoyed watching that live. I now need to follow this Rhys Walsh guy through his season. So I'll subscribe to either Fox Sports subscription channel or I'll buy the NRL app. Now, if they can get a minute percentage of American sports lovers to do that in their off-season... because they've suddenly been exposed to it. That will mould and pay for everything.
And I know it's an elephant in the room. There's a big Betfred thing there.
Or the Bagpuss in the room.
And the big Bagpuss in the room is, obviously this deal has been put together by the NRL very much with gambling in mind.
100%.
Anyone who looks at the NFL on a weekly basis will know that you're not just betting on the results, you're not just betting on the handicap, you're betting on how many yards players make, how many yards they throw, and etc., and whether a field goal goes over or not. So you would be looking at how many metres is Ash Hanley going to make this week? And
I think having seen it live, they will see all the elements that make up the game. But the important thing that came over was this is built around personalities. American sport isn't so much about the team. You might support a team, but what you really follow are the people that play the game. So we've all heard of Patrick Mahomes. If he walked in now, I probably wouldn't recognise him, but I know we managed to give them some personalities. If they want to go into the betting market, they can now say, hey, that little kid that ran around a lot, I want to bet on something that he did or might do next week. Or it was fantastic. And I'm an apologist for rugby league, you know that, but I was at 6:30 in the morning glad that I had stayed up all night to watch it, because it was fantastic.
Kevin says the stadium play music in every stoppage and play takes a bit of getting used to. I think it worked during the World Cup, apart from that trumpet thing which you didn't like, but I think it works during an event. It's because we're not used to it.
The only thing that was slightly concerning was that after one of the tries they did play Sweet Caroline.
Well, unless it wasn't marching on together, you know, because it's too catchy. So Vegas gets the thumbs up, and if you want us to go over there, Peter Vlandy's next year, well,
clearly they must have paid a lot of media outlets to be there. So
when Steve Mascord comes back, that might be his next book. Not the ones right now.
I haven't heard he's on his way back yet. Oh, no. Which is a bit of a worry.
He might be stuck there. Oh dear.
I don't think he's posted anything for a day. I'm getting concerned.
Steve, get in touch. The NRL go to Vegas. The NFL decide that Catalans will have to pay for teams to visit them, says Phil. Oh, you brought it down, Phil. Well, like, oh, positivity now. Oh, no. That snuck out last week. That was a good one. So
I don't know why, but I've got a feeling that's also to do with television money. That the idea was that if Catalan bought a deal in, the proceeds will be shared with the competition. They now have a deal. Now, I don't know how much they keep and TV3 in Spain are paying, but I think the idea is that whatever is coming into Catalan is shared out amongst the other teams, and it might be a way of doing it without.
I think it's also to give them the parity, to lose the parity with Catalan, because to lose pay for the away teams to travel.
If I was Bernard, I'd be buying a second hand jet to lend to all the teams.
Bernard Airways.
Yeah.
But yeah,
if you're not coming in on these expensive, you know, first class flights, like, we'll send an aeroplane to you.
That sounds more expensive, to be honest, than getting on an easy jet or whatever, Ryanair, which is what they usually do.
I think Kennedy Cherrington was trying to get a women's game over there next year.
There's talk of the Gillaroos maybe playing again.
Not the Kangaroos, because they never play.
No, the Gillaroos. No. Playing maybe Canada or.
So far in the golden boot running, it's USA, Canada, Montenegro, North Macedonia and Serbia and the Dutch and the Germans, I think, isn't it? And anyone else hasn't played yet, I don't think. We'll just see what happens come the end of the year. We still don't know, do we? Do we know what's happening in June? Are England playing in France, or is that just still...
Yeah.
Has it been announced? Or,
I have no idea. Because it's the anniversary of French rugby league. It's the 90th anniversary, and the games are taking place in France.
116 years of rugby league. So
yeah,
116 years. Congratulations.
In that part of the world,
the winners invent history, don't they? That's the problem. This is the problem. So we need to. Is there an Australian version of Professor Tony Collins who can go and tell them?
David Middleton.
No, he's just on the test. Seen him on the telly. 1895 cut roundup. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Bradford 21, Swinton 12 in front of attendance not given. Swinton apparently robbed in that one. Staying next to the shirts there.
They had what looked like a try disallowed.
Sheffield 26, Matley 10, which sets up Sheffield York again, having the battle of the LNER last week. They now meet again in the semi-finals because York beat Oldham 46-12. Everyone's decided that the wheels are off the Oldham bus because they're going to storm through League One, but now they've lost two games in 2 weeks to teams in the higher divisions.
In cup competitions.
Where if you beat Barrow 30-12? It wasn't a very exciting game, but Barrow looked good, actually. Their half-backs kicked the ball well. They did the Wigan thing from the scrum. They kicked the ball from the scrum and they nearly scored. And they were all on side, but they went into touch. So
the semi-finals are not for quite some time, though,
months,
are they?
Months. All the teams will be assigned players from, Wakefield might have a team full of Wigan players by then. I don't know who Bradford's dual reg partners are in.
Is that game at Bradford?
It is at Bradford. Yeah. I won't be going. So, fingers crossed. I can only hope. But
Wembley beckons.
Yeah, I mean, now
when was the last time Wakefield went to
79.
Okay.
In the worst Challenge Cup final ever.
That takes some saving.
Even worse than Wigan Hull when it rained.
That was bad.
Well, on a par.
On a par.
Don't bother searching out the highlights for Widnes against Wakefield in 1979. No. There aren't any.
No. Cup Kings won, though, so that's all right. So if Wakefield get to Wembley, am I going to have to go down the night before and do the captain's run stuff?
Well, I don't think you'll be doing the captain's run.
Well, no. I don't know. Depends how desperate. Get a game for the other team. I'll play for them. This week, it's the Challenge Cup is back. I've no idea what's going on. Swinton Sheffield on the iPlayer. So Saturday, you've got that followed by London Wigan at 3, followed by Catalans Hull at 5:30. Wonderful. Why are Widnes and Batley kicking off at 6 on a Saturday night? Kick off early, you don't have to use your floodlights then.
There's probably table tennis going out the stadium. The number of times we used to go and have the security briefing, and they used to tell us there's a table tennis event on at this. Okay.
Table tennis, only in Rugby. Featherstone Wakefield on Sunday on the Sportsman at 3. Halifax York Acorn also at 3 on Sunday in the Challenge Cup for the right to get knocked out by a Super League team in the sixth round.
The draw of which is next Monday.
Oh, is it? How wonderful. Is it going to be made actually on telly this time, or just, hidden on some BBC local radio station like last time? I don't know. Not that I'm bitter, obviously, about these things.
I don't think we've got the draw.
No.
We're
not allowed to do any draws. We're not allowed anything.
We got the European draw.
We got the European draw. The wheelchair challenge got draws with me. Let me mention that. And because, it's Amy Hardcastle's birthday today.
What's that got to do with the wheelchair?
It's just because it's her birthday, and that's the women's mention of Rugby League.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That's what I mention it. Quarterfinals of the Challenge Cup. Hull versus Catalans.
Ooh.
Leeds versus Challenge Trophy winner. London Roosters versus Challenge Trophy runner-up. Wigan versus Halifax.
And they've drawn the semi-finals.
They have. Right? Leeds or versus Wigan or Halifax. London or versus Hull or Catalans. And then the final, 1st of June, English Institute of Sport in Sheffield. Get your tickets now if they're on sale, I don't know. And before that, 6th of April, Wigan Catalans European Club Championship. Has anything else happened this week? I think we have pretty much spoken about everything I can think of that's happened. Unless, did anything happen at your referees meeting last week?
Oh, no, nothing of any interest, really.
It's a bit disappointing, isn't it? I think that's it. Unless. Well, the magazine goes to print this week, which means I've got to write something.
Oh, you've not written yours yet?
No, I've written. One
of the people around the table has already submitted and had their copy edited and the page set.
Well, we'll do eventually. But I've got my notes ready.
No one likes a class SWAT, do they?
No. How much does it cost to light a stadium for those establishing shots Sky use ahead of every game? You know those ones they use? Here's the Halliwell Jones Stadium, it's all lit up, but there's no one there. How much does it cost for that? Sky is supposed to be we did that thing last week with John Wells last year. He did that presentation about Sky going economically friendly. Yeah,
it's
and then they line up stadiums.
It's all drones.
Is it AI? Wilson-Amor. What's that all about? I have to work out what I'm going to write about in the magazine. But the games are on this week. Enjoy them. We'll be back next week. Might be a bonus podcast in the middle of the week. Might just go somewhere and speak to loads of people and then think, might as well stick out as a podcast.
How's your fantasy team getting on?
to have a look.
Doesn't sound good. That.
Well, if they keep picking players and dropping them because Wigan and Lee don't play a game for a week and then you have to bring them back in. I thought they had Ash Hanley in the team, but I haven't. I've got Harry Newman. So, you know, as long as he
did
behaves,
well.
Yeah, and then he gets sent off, it's all right. Top of the 40-20 league currently are the Yorkshire Hurricanes, which is Dean Allen. Dean Allen, he must know everything about rugby league. We'll have to get him on. He's got three teams in the top four. 29th.
Is that the tactic of you throwing enough mud some sticks?
I think so. 29th out of 59. So
mid-table.
Very much,
yeah. Mid-table.
Very much Salford. I am Salford. my nephew's team is below me, so that'll cause them trouble. But that's I'm still involved in it. I'm still intrigued in it, and I'm still picking my team on a weekly basis. So I must still be enjoying it. Now, if you ask me in a few weeks' time, and I may have think about don't know what I'm doing. But so maybe another podcast later this week. Because if you do more than one podcast in a week, you get further up the charts. I'm just trying to game the system now.
Oh, so that's why you did what you did on Saturday.
I didn't do it as a podcast, but now I'm just trying to work out how to game the system.
But so for those listening to the podcast, they will want to know what biscuits we've got this week.
Oh, yes. Club biscuits. I mean, here's the thing. On the bench with Jenna and John, because I know you listen, James, because you're our spy of other podcasts.
Yeah.
Do they talk about biscuits on their podcast?
No, they don't. And
when they do, let me know, because someone knows they're leaking ideas from us. But yeah, club biscuits.
So this is the UK's answer to the... Oh, what's it called?
Tim Tam.
Isn't it?
No, that's a penguin.
Oh, that's a penguin. So that's penguins next
Australians
week.
Australians have clubs.
But it's an orange club. Not just any club.
So send your biscuit suggestions. We'll end up doing a BBC
this
local
is this
radio.
Local
podcast.
Radio, yeah.
Because I've seen the BBC, they did this press release last week. They've got lots of new podcasts on BBC Sounds, but it's all just famous people. Well, you're famous. You've been on the telly. Phil has been on the telly. You've been on Backchat a few times. I was on BBC Sport once. So yeah, we might get signed up to do a podcast about biscuits or something. Coming soon with some of the famous people. But yeah, definitely we're not out of things to talk about now. So thanks for listening. James tells me I need to be more professional. So do like and subscribe. Share this podcast with all your friends. And also leave a review on Apple because it helps us.
Only 5-star.
Only 5-star reviews. You can downvote the video. That's fine because that counts as some kind of response. That's fine. But otherwise, it's all positivity. Otherwise, I'll just ban you. I can do that.
Sports Social Podcast Network.